You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 28 August. We have NVIDIA results after the U.S. close tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Carmen Meporani. Pick and Pay trading update. Still messy, but I suppose Boxer looking a whole lot better. Let's give them that. Donny Pretorius from Master Drilling. Results that saw an impairment. I need to dig into that, but a decent pipeline of orders. And then Brendan Grandling. From RMB, local beverage industry and its importance to the economy. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Durban woman reclaims home after bank illegally sold it at auction. Durban High Court held that SA Home Loans had unlawfully sold and transferred her home. They must now give it back. Business Day, top court agrees to hear Vodacom's appeal in Please Call Me case. Can't they just pay the guy already? Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.2%, NASDAQ a third of a percent higher. Over in the east, it's mostly red. Sydney is a couple of points, 0.01% higher. Tokyo off a tenth of a percent, Hong Kong down 0.9%, Tencent down 1.9%. Commodities mixed, gold is higher at 2,551, Brent 79.63, Platinum 9.61, and Palladium, the other green, at 9.62. Rand 1775, Bitcoin 59,500, and top 40 opening call a red open, about 190 points to this downside. That is a quarter of a percent.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Carmen Meporani, independent analyst. Carmen, appreciate the early morning time. The Pick and Pay trading update. I suppose we expected it to be a little bit bleak. Standout is certainly Boxer. Closing, I think it was, 16 stalls in total. Some franchise, some corporate owned. I mean, your take of it. The stock has certainly run. The rights issue was well subscribed for. Is there still opportunity here in Pick and Pay after that update?
So I think, you know, one of the key things that Pick and Pay does have for itself is how huge it is, right? Yeah. But that means it could fall really hard. Having said that, as you said, there has been some recovery in the share price year to date, up just under 21%. But over the last 1 year period, it is down 20%. So, you know, take those numbers from whence it comes. But I think, you know, the key for this trading update and the trading statement is that we've got to give management time, number one. Mm-hmm. They've only come into, appointed from March 2024. So that's still too little time to actually shift this whole ship around if that is the way it is going to end up. But as you've mentioned, I think the key here is definitely those Boxer results. Considering that they're going to, go ahead with their step two of their recapitalization, which is the planned IPO for Boxer later in the year. So that's quite key to ensure that the market reads it as, you know, Boxer is stable. It is still the shining star in the group. And this will once again, obviously, just support that balance sheet significantly.
The idea of Boxer listing is certainly attractive. It gives us another grocer on the market. Of course, Pick and Pay is going to be IPOing, I mean, part of their crown jewels, which, I don't know, raises some questions around Pick and Pay. I suppose they'll still hold a chunk, but, I mean, they are giving up what works.
Well, I know, Simon, I used to cover Pick and Pay a few years ago, and one of the key things, the rhetoric was that the market was begging for Boxer to be stripped out. The feeling was that management on the Boxer side, you know, had better prospects, the strategy was more aligned with what the South African market or South African economy was looking for. So it's always been a request from the market, and I think they've agreed eventually to say, look, we don't have many levers to pull here. Yeah. This is one of the key strategies. Let's give the market what they want. It will, as I said, help their balance sheet. We did see them become technically insolvent at their last FY24 results. So it's quite key. It's quite significant. I don't think it's necessarily just giving away the crown jewels. I think it's a twofold, as I said. One, the market has been begging for it, number one, just to get that value out of the, as you said, the crown jewel. But secondly, also they need the steady, as I said, of the balance sheet to keep forging ahead and then to restructure and look at operations, I suppose.
Yeah, no, look, and I'm part of that market who's eagerly awaiting a Boxer listing. We'll leave it there, Comrade Mapurani. Independent analyst, appreciate the early morning time, and that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you holding Pick and Pay? Do you like the potential? Are you perhaps watching and waiting? Are you perhaps eagerly awaiting Boxer? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Same with Donnie Pretorius, CEO of Master Drilling. Results for 6 months ending June, all in dollars, saw revenue up 17.3%, profit in USD down 75, HEPS in US dollars down 3.2% per share. Donnie, let's start with that operating profit decrease. As I understand, you've got a piece of equipment in the US that is currently not being used, and it's essentially been written down, which I'm not an accountant, but it confuses me because surely it would be used in another financial period.
Yeah, Simon, that's the part that the engineers don't understand, myself included. Okay. You know, that's just the way accounting principles work in this part of the world and internationally.
Okay.
So I think the good news is, you know, if the equipment is committed to a project again and the cash flows is positive, then you can actually write it back again. So I think it's a temporary input. The machine is currently, or the machines, equipment currently in our yard, and undergo certain upgrades, and then we hope to get these equipment on projects early next year.
Yeah, okay. So accounting technicalities. I'm not the chartered accountant here either. I mean, all in all, looking at the numbers, and if we remove this accounting technicality, a tough period, but another good set of numbers for Master Drilling. I mean, you're in the right spaces, you've got the right product, you've got some innovation coming through, and mining's always difficult, but it's happening, and some commodity prices are helping.
Simon, I think two things important. One, I think if we just talk about profitability, yes, it was okay, but I really think South America, you know, those guys need to get out of the blocks. I think Brazil with some due technical issues, the delay in the committed orders from the Chuquicamata project would really make a huge impact on the profitability of the group, given the amount of machines deployed in that area. And two, very important, we need to get some of the special equipment that we're currently designing, shaft borer, the horizontal boring machine, tunnel borer, and the like. We need to get that over the line. And hopefully in the next 12 months, we could probably see with a bit of luck some of those revenues coming through. And that should really move the needle for the group. And I was saying to people earlier this morning on a call, just take a step back. 5 years ago, the discussion with miners was, please help and save costs. Today, the question is, how can we help to get quicker access to ore bodies? And I think if you just look from a high level down on the industry and where the world is going to, really think what we've been doing in the project space is certainly something that can help the miners and probably add some value to get quicker access to some of these ore bodies.
Certainly, I mean, cost is important, but I take your point. I mean, it is, you know, particularly and randomly, we can take gold sitting at all-time highs. You want that ore out of the ground as much as possible. You mentioned South America. Africa remains your largest market, as I understand, but not your majority of your revenue, but still your biggest market.
Still the biggest market. There's a lot happening in Africa, especially in the gold space. And obviously with the DRC, with copper mines, the likes of Kamoa, Kipushi and all that. So there's a lot of activity in the DRC. But Africa, in a medium term, seemed to be well positioned on the back of the geopolitical uncertainties, obviously supporting gold. And then, as I said, you know, the copper, especially in the DRC.
The equipment. I mean, you mentioned South America, you've got Africa. You're obviously also in North America. You've got the World Division as well. How practical and easy is it to move the equipment around the world? Well, is that something which is complex, but you need to do it depending on client demands?
Exactly that, Simon. What we try and do is try and keep the equipment in that timeline. So we try and move from north to south and necessarily east to west. You know, when you start crossing the ocean, then becomes an issue. You would probably delay projects 2, 3, 4 months, which have a huge impact on your ARPOs. So ideally, in a perfect world, and it's more a theory, is we move north-south, south-north, but ideally not east-west or west-east.
Gotcha. When we chatted last time, you were talking about your digital ventures, importantly, asset-light digital ventures. It's still early days. How's that doing?
Absolutely. It's probably one of the greatest acquisitions that we've done to date.
Mm-hmm.
That company is pumping. It's probably today 120%, you know, running at capacity of 120%, really running flat out. And apart from that, I think this company is well positioned now to take on some work elsewhere in the world. So we would like to internationalize this business. We've got already some contracts up in Mexico going, and we hope in the next 12, 24 months to really get that over the line. We need to internationalize this business. I think there's a huge opportunity in the technology which those guys, you know, applied currently in South Africa.
Got you on that. Commodities, if my memory is correct, it was silver, it was zinc, it was nickel, were the big ones, some gold in there. Is that still sort of the top end? I mean, you're broadly across the range, but are those still the big ones?
Yeah, I need to be careful. We talk about looking at the crystal ball, but I think two leading indicators, right or wrong. I think the shift with the so-called green economy is supporting certain commodities. And we said to ourselves, we need to be close to those commodities, and worldwide we need to track them.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the miners in a lower cost end. And that's typically the commodities like copper, maybe nickel, in some cases lithium.
Mm-hmm.
Cobalt is certainly one. So I think that's the one. The other box is with this geopolitical issues that we face in the world. We were saying to ourselves, I think gold and silver maybe is for the medium term, I think, well positioned. So that's typically, you know, the model that we try and use, right or wrong.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like to split the sort of the new energy versus the geopolitical. Pipeline, how's your pipeline, your order book looking over the rest of the financial year and into the years ahead?
Look, we're sitting on the 600 million, the highest ever pipeline. So that's probably supported by what I just said. You know, if you look at the so-called shift and this green economy and the geopolitical issues, hence the reason why it's probably sitting on the 600 million, or just north of 600 million at the moment.
And of course, that'll be $600 million. We leave it to Donnie Pretorius, CEO, Master Drilling. Always appreciate the time.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Brendan Grandling, sector head, CPG and beverages. Brendan, appreciate the time today. Beverages, I was prepping for this interview. It occurred to me that as a consumer, anywhere in the world, but in South Africa in particular, we actually consume a lot of them. And it might be tea or coffee, it might be alcoholic or non-alcoholic. But I don't think it's a sector we give thought to. But I imagine it is significant in our economy in terms of employment, in terms of sales, and ultimately in terms of GDP.
Simon, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. No, and absolutely, I don't think we give it enough credits, to be honest. I think if you look at the broader beverage sector, it kind of fits within the food and beverage subcategory that really makes up about 5% of GDP. But when you look at the primary and secondary contribution that beverages makes, estimates are around about $20 billion. And that's really, you know, as you pointed out, it really comes from the inputs that are used. It's the packaging, it's the labor, it's the manufacturing, all of that. So it's a fairly sizable contributor to the economy.
Yeah, that entire supply chain. I mean, it's dynamic. I mean, I suppose innovative is the word, but both locally and globally. But even locally, we see a lot of dynamism within the industry. It's not just sort of like, you know, do you want a beer or a cup of tea? There is a lot happening.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there's two recent foreign direct kind of investments that were made that really point to this. Obviously, one which is very well known is the Heineken's acquisition of Distell. The second one is Varun Beverages out of India acquiring Bevco, which is the Pepsi bottle in South Africa. But to be honest, I mean, it's far beyond that. You know, if you really look at the industry as a whole, it's divided into the alcoholic space and then the call it non-alcoholic space. And those two spaces are really starting to merge together, as we've seen from a global perspective. But what's really exciting is that the smaller players have become very innovative and very nimble and really are challenging some of the bigger players in the market.
Yeah, I mean, one of those is energy drink. And we all know Red Bull, we all know Monster. In the US, there's Celsius and others. And it's been, I mean, the Monster investment, probably one of the top investments over the last couple of decades in the US. But locally, we've got the entrepreneurs who not, you know, they're not lying back and saying, cool, have your Monster, your Red Bull. They're kind of taking it to these global brands.
No, absolutely. And actually outperforming these global brands. So if we look at kind of Red Bull and Monster as the global premium brands within the segment, we've got some really innovative brands such as Switch, Score, Reboost and Dragon, which really are challenging the status quo and really playing in a space where they've tackled the kind of price point really well, but also then getting the product out there. So, you know, in South Africa, particularly and broader Africa, availability is critical. And those players have really done well in that space.
Are we seeing the trend that's also a bit of a global trend of lower alcohol? So still alcoholic beverages, but with lower alcohol levels.
Absolutely. I think that's really where the excitement lies. I mean, again, if I can just point to the big players, I mean, you know, the beer players, you know, dominate this space. And really, you've seen a massive switch into what they term as beyond beer. So Heineken and AB InBev really moving aggressively into RTDs or flavored alcoholic beverages, FABs. This is really the space that we've seen, again, great innovation from local players in South Africa. So particularly in the spritzer space, we've seen some very, very good spritzer brands enter the market in South Africa, again, innovated within our local shores. And then particularly one category, which, again, you may have noticed, is really canned wine or sparkling canned wine. Now, this is a fairly new category. You know, there were actually some regulations that were prohibiting canned wine as recently as kind of 3-4 years ago. So that market is really taking off and some really interesting brands, again, locally produced and developed, you know, coming onto the shelves.
RTD, ready to drink. Does the canned wine fit into that category or is it one on its own?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky, it's a tricky one, but yes, it absolutely does. I mean, if you kind of look at how it's positioned with the consumer, it absolutely does. And also where it kind of competes is, as I said, with the spritzers, the low alcoholic space, we're finding that, you know, what these brands and players are trying to achieve is a term known as sessionability in the beverage space, where ultimately what you want is you want the consumer to be able to consume multiple products in one session. So again, it speaks to your previous statement that the younger generation really wants something that's maybe lower in alcohol content and that allows them to have more of a product.
And what we must have, if we've got these smaller brands coming through in the energy drink space, but more broadly in the beverage space, is that as a country, we have the processes behind it. We have the canning, the distribution. I mean, obviously, the big guys, you know, Heineken, AB InBev, they've got that. But it's available for smaller entrepreneurs as well.
And that's something we're really excited about as a bank, I guess, is looking at that value chain. And we really have seen some really good startups that have then moved from startup space into, you know, fairly scalable businesses. And exactly to what you're pointing out, you know, in the canning space, in the ingredients space, you know, and also in the contract manufacturing space. Mm. So particularly in the RTD subsector, we really are seeing some tremendous growth from local players really supporting this growth.
Talk to me about cider. 20 years ago, I mean, the cider was available. I think there was just one. I'm not going to drop names because I might get it wrong. I mean, part of the whole Heineken attraction to our market was allegedly the cider. I mean, we are, my sense is, global leaders in that particular category.
Yes, I'm actually absolutely right. I think, you know, there's data out there which will indicate that actually Hunter's and Savannah, which is now under the Heineken beverages stable, is actually the largest selling cider brand globally now. So yes, we are the number one cider brands globally now. I mean, obviously, you know, you're at AB InBev, which is challenging them quite aggressively in that space. But again, it crosses over with ready-to-drinks. So what we're seeing is that this push into cider and the growth in the cider market really has transitioned into ready-to-drinks. And again, it speaks to this new demographic of consumers that are really looking for something different, want something that appeals to them. And again, as I said earlier on, they want a sessionable beverage that they're able to drink, you know, more than once.
We'll leave it there. That's Brendan Grendling. He's sector head of CPG and Beverages. Appreciate the time today. Attention investors and finance enthusiasts, get ready for the annual Money Summit, Africa's largest and most influential savings and investment event. Join me on Tuesday, 10 September, Sandton Convention Center, as we connect with over 100 top CEOs and industry leaders across 20 exciting conferences and forums, all in one incredible day. Secure your spot now. Register online, moneysummit.co.za, for free with the code MONEYWEBGUEST. one word. This is a chance to be part of Africa's premier savings and investment event. Be sure to not miss it. That's it for today. I was chatting with Alex Dace yesterday. We're talking Stadio Advertech results, and we asked which was your preferred education stock. Advertech and Stadio way out in front. Kira following up. And then a bunch of you said, hey, you like a bit of all of them. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, the ABSA Market Review.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.